Welcome back, everybody, to Football is Life, the incomparable show where we watch Ted Lasso and then we talk about it. This week's episode, in a parenthetical, I don't want to go to Chelsea, a place that any good Arsenal fan like myself and Jason Snell does not want to go to either. But when Ted Lasso goes there, we've got to go there. I'm Moises Chuyan, your host for this week, where we talk about episode 2 of season 3 of Ted Lasso. Joining me, in no particular order, but the order that is how they're organized in Zoom. That's what I decided to go with this evening. Gene McDonald, welcome back to Football is Life.
It's good to be back, as May says about being back in the Premier League. I feel like I'm back in the Premier League. Yay.
And, you know, he's leaving Juventus, but that doesn't mean that he isn't a superstar. It's Casey Liss.
You know, it's called empathy, you dusty old fart. Yep. I am excited to be here. I am so excited that Ted Lasso is back. Let's get to it. I'm excited.
So the first episode of the season, the show has already covered. It's a lot of table setting, furniture moving, getting things set and calibrated for the season to come. This episode, various things start to get off to the races. Those who didn't have spoiled for them by reading reviews, the presence of Zava. Zava comes into the mix. And Max Kaczynski, I think, has rarely been given this much fun to have on screen. We'll definitely talk about him. But we kick off the episode at Keely Jones PR, which increasingly feels less and less like the name that's on the window than the office that is kind of running her business for her, and that's not exactly how she'd like it. So we have a little bit more of the stuff that Keely is dealing with, and then we shift back over to Richmond, and we re-meet a dear old friend, Mr. Trent Krim, formerly of The Independent, who is looking to write a book about the club that Keely, Rebecca, and Higgins all think is a terrible idea, and Ted very happily listens to none of their pantomimed advice and says, yeah, great, let's do it. And I feel like this was kind of the sort of Trent Krim presence a lot of us were anticipating for this season. How do we feel about this fly on the wall potentially being a fly in the ointment for the team?
I was really glad because I knew that, you know, I had heard he was going to be back, and I had this. Also, I don't know if I heard it or I just like made it up myself that he was going to get hired by Richmond. And I thought that would be terrible. That won't make sense at all. But this makes total sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. I love the character of Trent Krim, The Independent, well, formerly The Independent, and the actor's name who's escaping me. Shoot, I don't remember the guy's name, but he, I think, does such a phenomenal job. And I really love the character. I just think James Lance. I think it's a fun character, and the interaction, which we'll get into in a minute, between Trent and Roy Kent is kind of fun and delightful, and you get a little bit more history for both of them, which I really enjoyed. I'm excited to see how this plays out. I think it seems at first, at least, that he's filling kind of the vacated role of Dr. Sharon, you know, the kind of outsider that's coming in. I'm going to say meddling, that has a negative connotation. I don't necessarily mean it that way, but, you know, coming in to stir the pot, maybe. Again, that also sounds kind of bad, but hopefully you get what I'm trying to say. But I'm here for it. I really love Trent Krim.
Yeah, he's kind of the outsider with an investment. Where there was more of a potentially adversarial relationship at first, and you know, a similar but not exactly the same kind of thing with Dr. Sharon. I think, I mean, for the purpose of talking about it, we could just follow the Trent Krim thread and kind of bounce around to the other stuff. But the other thing that happens in this scene is the revelation that Zava, very clearly for international football fans, modeled on Zlatan. A notorious ego monster. Basically, just Zava, as you see him on screen, there's a real guy that's just that. there really is. Saying that he's leaving Juventus, Ted not knowing who Juventus, one of the top flight clubs in Europe, still 3 years into the job, it's little moments like this that I feel a little bit of sympathy for Nate because I'm like, come on, man, that's inexcusable. How do you? I mean, okay, it's a funny joke, but come on, you got your club back into the Premier League. Learn just a little bit more about football, so that I'm not echoing you when you go, why am I still here? Why are you still here? if you care so little about the sport, so let's follow the Trent Grimm thread down in the direction that. That Casey was talking in a little bit. We have an encounter in the locker room after some miscommunication, misunderstanding of why Zava is writing a book about Trent Grimm or whatever it is that culminates in Roy very clearly drawing a line and saying that nobody in the club is to say a word to Trent Grimm. And up till this point in the show, Roy and Trent's paths really haven't crossed, which is something that I didn't really realize until this episode. And I had a feeling where this was going, and I'm glad that they didn't drag it out over a course of multiple episodes. But I thought there's got to be something that Trent said that really, really got to Roy when he was, you know, younger in his senior career. But the beauty to me of that moment with Roy is that he really commands the respect of that locker room. There isn't the kind of disunity that there was. How did the two of you take the pronouncement against speaking to the enemy, as it were?
I think for me it was. Sorry, go ahead, Gene.
No, you go ahead.
I think for me it was a return to form for Roy, which I both enjoyed and didn't at the same time, because it seemed like, okay, we've got season one Roy back, which is fun. And I do enjoy, you know, the complete curmudgeon grump version of Roy Kent. But I almost felt like we were throwing away a couple, or like, you know, a season of development and maturity that Roy had gone through last season. And so as much as I do laugh about Roy being cranky old Roy, it still made me wonder, like, well, what happened to all this development and growth? And Moises, as you pointed out, like, we end up finding out why, you know, he got triggered, basically. And it does make sense, but it was one of those, like, half of me was smiling and half of me was like, I don't know about this. What, Gene, am I nuts?
No, I think I loved it, because I was like, yay, this is like the Roy Kent we came to love in season one. However, the Roy Kent of season three shouldn't be this, abrasive and mean, basically. However, a lot is going on, and that whole scene with the locker room, the who's on first kind of, you know, gig, which just is one of the best, like, ensemble bits for the team. Better than watching them play is watching them play telephone, as it were, messing up the news. But the big news isn't Zava or anything else, or Trent Grimm. It is Roy and Keeley, and he doesn't want to talk about it, but he's Roy, after breaking up with Keeley, is going to be, let's stay out of his way, Roy, for now, because who knows? We're just starting to find out what is really going on with him emotionally. And
this is a really Roy heavy episode. The show is still an ensemble show, and it's juggling a lot of things, which, you know, some reviewers and some folks are kind of like, wow, the show has lost its focus. Well, it's just got a gigantic ensemble cast, and it's got a lot of storylines to land. But backing up here to the fact that Roy broke up with Keeley, and that to a person, nobody can understand why he would do that, and call him on it being the most incredibly stupid thing, as his niece did in the first episode. I'm glad that the writers are not just circling and underlining, but highlighting how incredibly dumb a choice that is, and how directly people would call him out for it, because it doesn't make sense. But to me, realistically, that that is part of what helps underline the fact that that Roy, as much of a heightened character as he is, I've known people who have broken up with somebody that they are clearly great with, that it just makes no sense. Not just leaning into the romantic comedy tropes, but it doesn't feel as ridiculous to me because everybody is flatly going, you've got to be kidding me. That makes absolutely no sense. Are you out of your mind? Do we need to get you checked out? did you get hit in the head? So we have the big meeting. Various different things are getting thrown around, including Will the Kit Man not knowing what a CD is, yes. Turning all of us to dust instantly.
I know. Golly, I've never felt more old.
Really? Is that a thing? Is that possible?
Sadly,
I guess if Ted doesn't know who Zaba is, Will cannot know what a CD is.
Two summers ago, I had to explain to legal adults what a floppy disk was. And why they were used.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But the floppy disks never were contained albums on them.
Well, that was the problem they had understanding it was. They were like, but it's not even like a CD. Like, if you had CDs, why did you use these? Before we all... turn into bags of dust as Jamie is constantly worried that Roy is going to, because his rapid aging is constantly showing more and more and more. I guess bouncing onto the other side of the Roy Keeley divide, we pick up with Keeley at her commercial shoot, where she runs into her old pal Shandy, a former roommate of hers when they lived with, I guess, five other people. Most of whom have gone on to marry footballers. How do we feel about this new disruptive force entering the universe? Do we have too big of a cast already, or do we have room for Shandy to show up and say, let's bring mimosas to the office tomorrow?
I don't think Shandy and her mimosas are going to last very long because of the mimosa thing. I think was telegraphing that, but I do think. Talking about, are there too many characters? Like, we skipped over the first, the show opens with Keeley, as you say, in the PR room. And so there's two characters, Keeley and Barbara. You know, Barbara's a new character. Barbara's going to outlast Shandy, in my opinion, my estimation. Barbara, I think Keeley has become, she's a great character. She was a great character, all along. And her growth has just been incredible. And it's, we've talked about on this show more than once. Ted Lasso had the makings of being a bro sports show. And they did not go there, and they really had real women characters that are incredible, that we care about. And Keeley is one of them. And I think right now, Keeley's story is really one of the focuses of the show now. And I think Keeley is like her arc now, working with Barbara, who obviously was antagonistic towards her. But we already see how she's going to win her over in certain ways. It's a bit like, like the Ted Lasso of this season. She's the one who has gotten herself to a point. She's a very competent person in what she was doing. And now she's in a context where she doesn't feel confident because she doesn't really know what's going on. She hasn't really worked in that kind of corporate PR VC world. She's been really good on social media, really good at modeling, but not playing the political game in the office. And we realize in this episode, of course, she hasn't hired anybody. Everybody has been put there from the venture capitalists that invested in her to start an agency. So now this makes a lot more sense, why she couldn't go for 6 weeks to Marbella with Roy at the end of last season, she has a lot of catching up to do, and but she's earnest about it. So when Shandy shows up in this model shoot, I mean, there's a moment where I almost cried because Shandy said the thing of, you know, I saw you in Vanity Fair, fully clothed, and I cried.
Yeah.
And I started getting a little choked up, and I thought Keely was getting choked up, but then it turned out to be a lamb poop joke. So she was, you know, sort of, her nose was twitching, and I thought,
why let someone live some emotion when you can have them react to a poop joke?
Right?
So, you know, anyway, I did, I thought it was, I don't think Shandy's going to contribute much to the character, you know, over budget for our attention, but I think Keely's story and Keely and Barbara and the rest of the office, that she's going to win those other people over.
Yeah.
That's clear.
I think, Jean, you brought up a really good point here, and it's part of why I have seen two more episodes of this than either of you have. And I feel like I'm doing an incredibly good job of not spoiling anything or tipping hand as to where different things are going. But one of the things that for me, makes me really okay with the show splitting up Roy and Keely, at least for now, you know, if when they get back together down the line, is that it's letting both of them live separate storylines, not being defined by one another, while still definitely being thought of as part of each other's lives, even though they're not in each other's lives actively right now. Mm-hmm. And I think Barbara and Shandy are these two interesting, very different counterpoints to the poles that Keely is being stretched between. And the presence of both of those characters, and I'm sure that we'll see at least a little bit more of Shandy, because economy of characters, why would they introduce somebody just to, you know, just to get rid of them almost instantly? I think the continued push-pull between that is something that makes me wonder what the VC who invested in Keely was investing in, or thought they were investing in, or why do they send this group of people to run an office for a person that they invest in. It's something that has me wondering more about that in the back of my head. I like that we're getting more depth with the Richmond players as they relate to Roy, and we're getting more depth with the other parts of this business and the characters that we've cared about since season one, in following what, you know, to some people might feel like a different show that's wedged into this show about Keely. But I don't believe in the parallel universe where Keely goes off to run this company of hers and she just kind of disappears from this show.
Yeah.
Because this three season arc that they've been playing, she's an integral part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. And I don't think, building on what Gene has said, I completely agree with you that I don't think that Shandy is long for this world in terms of the show. It seemed to me that she's just the lever by which we will cause a tipping point between Barbara and Keely. And I am here for the Keely storyline. I think her character is excellent. I think the growth that she has shown and the change that she has shown is really, really awesome. And you know, when she was introduced in the I think it was episode one of the entire series, you know, she seemed like this very vapid model that didn't really have that much going for her. And immediately it turns out, oh, no, that's not true at all. This is not the character that you would expect from an average American sitcom. And she is so much more than that. And there's so much depth there. And even in this episode, or at least I think it was this episode. Maybe I'm getting my wires crossed. No, yeah, it was this episode, because when Barbara's so mean to Shandy, and then mm-hmm. Keely says, you know, I'll take care of this. And, you know, I half assumed that was like a future promise to be delivered in another episode. But no, she marched right down to Barbara's office, and we have the aside about the snow globes. But then kind of lays Barbara out and says, that's BS. Like, you can't talk to people that way. And it's clear that Keely is trying to, and justifiably so, to wrestle control back, I guess. I mean, maybe she never really had it in the first place, but wrestle control back for the PR firm that has her name on it, you know? And like you were saying, Moises, like, I'm very curious to see what is the justification for this this ragtag team, or not even ragtag, this well-oiled team that all knew each other. How did they end up at Keeley's PR firm? You know, this is what you were saying a minute ago. I'm very curious to see how this is unpacked throughout the season.
Yeah, I, as somebody who's worked in public relations and publicity in some respects, and worked alongside people in PR, I think it's wonderful that people are seeing that yes, PR is work, and it is a thing that you can't just have one client that is a Premier League football club and get by. It is a matter of juggling various different clients that have various different needs, and sometimes those things come into conflict. We haven't really seen that happen, but presumably, hey, it might. But just Keeley having to operate at this kind of scale, and this early in the season pushing back, resulting in you know, what we call the snow globe scene. I think Barbara has never, not even has not experienced much, but has never had a boss in Keeley's position that has actually cared, said the words, I care, and I care about you, and I'm concerned about you, and I'm concerned about this, or I'm concerned about people, or I worry about this, or I worry about that, and is actually invested in people and not just the bottom line and cashing the checks and hanging out on a yacht. Go ahead.
I was going to say, she's Keeley's Nate. Where Nate's nobody ever asked me my name.
Yeah.
Nobody ever noticed my snow globes. And you know, we'll see. I don't want another Nate in this this show. One Nate is plenty.
Can Keeley stop Barbara from going the full Nate route? We will see. The big centerpiece of the episode, as I said earlier, I'm an Arsenal fan, so the only reason I like to go to Stamford Bridge is to watch Arsenal absolutely massacre them. but we go to Chelsea, and the first person we meet, somebody who occupies a role where some of my favorite people going to an Austin FC match are the stadium employees that are there to deal with whatever kind of miscreants decide to make people's lives difficult on the day, the security staff. And good old Bruce, who Roy sells having a long-lived relationship with, is equally shocked that Roy broke up with Keeley. and you would hope that Roy would take the sage counsel of Bruce and just get over his crap and move on. A lot of stuff happens here. We've got Rebecca and Higgins on Zava duty. Emperor Palpatine, Rupert shows up. We have so much to cover here. Let's jump in.
There's so much. I just want to jump in with my favorite line.
Go for it.
I don't know. My one favorite line.
Let's do it.
Top in the top five, vast network of lip reading massage therapists. Please consult them, Higgins. And that stuff was, they must have had so much fun just doing those lines, Higgins especially, with his, did you think Glenning, like, with
Jeremy Swift, his character has his own form of Glenning, which is he knows many people in very important places to know things who do not have names that you would recognize. But he has a very good grasp on people who have half heard or think they lip read or read a piece of body language a certain way.
Yeah, one of the things about this episode, and I watched it twice. I watched it, you know, Tuesday night for me, which is when it came out, and then I watched it again this morning. And I could go on a whole tangent about how the first time I watched both the first and the second episodes, neither of them really landed for me, which is weird because I consider myself obviously a very big fan of the show. But on both, having rewatched both of them, I was perhaps not in the right frame of mind, and they're better episodes than I initially gave them credit for. And this was an example, like the first time I watched this episode, the whole who's on first, what's on second in the locker room, that at first I was like, okay, that's kind of a trope, you know, or a cliche maybe. I'm not in love with us doing that. Yeah. And then,
this, Scrubs?
Right. Well, I'm a Scrubs super fan, so that's a compliment and not. But nevertheless, but your point is taken. And in this whole thing with Higgins, you know, the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, I got it. Yes, haha. But upon rewatching it, I think I was being, I don't know, maybe too Nate-ish, because it's actually so well done. And all of these actors are so good at their craft. And it really is taking these tropes and I'm not going to go so far as to say elevating them, but just executing on them really, really well. And, you know, we went back to this same joke two or three times, you know, with Higgins trying to figure out what Zava was doing. But we didn't push, they didn't push it too far. Like, they went right up to the line where it was like, okay, guys, move it along. But they didn't cross the line. And I really loved that. And I also, since I have the mic, I really wanted to call out, I loved seeing the Chelsea fans welcome Roy back, and like the sign on the stadium, they don't make them like Roy anymore, and singing the Roy Kent song. Like, I loved that so much. And even yeah, as we're getting back into Curmudgeon Roy, who I like, you know, in his own right, it just made me so happy to see him have his moment in the sun and see people appreciate him for, if not what he's doing now, then at least what he did before.
That's one thing that I'll say Chelsea fans actually do well. They do a good job of in real life doing that sort of thing for players that have meant a lot to their clubs, even if they're coming back on an opposing side. And that's common throughout the Premier League. And that's something that whatever one might want to say about football fan culture, it's something that is touching, not just because of the way that it plays dramatically, but because I've seen stuff like that in other real life professional football things, and it's the cracking of the shell around Roy, where he does let his emotions out, and he is a warm-hearted, emotional person, who you just have to get through that exterior. I don't feel like he's completely reverted back.
Agreed. Yeah.
To season one Roy necessarily. I like that whatever pretense he sort of has put up, whether it's the Trent Crim thing that gets resolved in this particular set piece, as it were. He is not allowed to fully regress. The team surrounding him, the friends around him, won't let him do that at this point.
That's well put.
Balloons and cards and stuffed animals. Yeah. It's like old Roy would have just thrown that all in the trash, and he actually read the cards. And then the just have to say that balloon popping thing was hysterical.
No, this was very good. So we have to play. We have to play some football, though.
Yeah, we got to play some football. And granted, they're doing it in the incredibly ugly all orange away kits, and I think they're ugly because they look like Houston Dynamo kits, but this allows me to get on a little soapbox and take us into Kit Corner, where we discuss only football fashion. The switch to Nike has been overall an incredible benefit to this show. The warm-up gear that the guys are wearing earlier in the episode, I went, oh man, that's great. I want to own it. Here's the problem, folks. Nike doesn't sell that stuff to the general public. I found out. You can buy jerseys, you can buy sweatshirts, but they don't sell those really cool warm-up shirts and shorts. But they do sell orange shirts that make me think that I'm watching the Netherlands national team or something. but the styling of the new Nike gear, it just looks so good. I wish the best parts of it were actually available for sale.
Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, and they'd had like no merch up until just a few months ago, if I recall correctly. I forget the machinations about who sold what to whom and when and whatnot. But they didn't have merch for the longest time, and then they did. But my understanding is it was all kind of crummy.
Now,
to your point, I believe there is more merch. I can't sit here, though, and let you besmirch orange, even though this orange was overdone and a little ugly. Uh-huh. My alma mater is maroon and orange. My wife's alma mater is blue and orange. So and orange. I have a soft spot for orange in my life. You know, I can't help but have a soft spot.
Eyes have been permanently damaged.
I'm telling you, Casey, orange in moderation, please.
That's
yes,
fair. Like, that's fair.
Orange with something else, but agreed, but just agreed. But just you know the, these parking cones with legs and arms. I can't abide this. It's just
no, you're right. You're right.
It reminds me of my hated cross state rivals so much. But the claret and blue that we see the fans wearing in the pub that we see elsewhere. The revised Richmond home shirts are really good, really agreed. Solid. So now that we've done all of the fashion and textile coverage that I think anybody can tolerate, I think we can jump around in this section of things, second only to the very emotional Heroes homecoming that Roy gets what I think of as the urinal confrontation for the ages between Rebecca and Zava.
Yeah.
I love how brazen she was doing that and giving her something to do other than fretting, which is most of what she has done this season so far.
But you're jumping over a couple of important Rebecca moments. Okay, so
take us back.
That get us to the urinal. The road to the urinal starts with.
It's like I shared my notes with you in advance, which I didn't. I love that we got that moment, but it doesn't work unless the build to it takes us there. So take it away, Gene.
Well, Rebecca, okay. I would say the Rebecca parts of this episode were the ones that just struck home for me big time. I mean, I do, you know, like, you know, a lot of people, but women especially, you know, we do fall for the bad boys, and we know that, you know, you've got the uber bad boy in this series that was Rebecca's ex-husband. When Rebecca explains to Keely how Rupert wooed her, I was sort of like, I was flat, like cringed out and sad, like, because I can picture that. I could totally picture that, you know, showing up and being the most charming and making you feel like you are the chosen, you know, and why she finally said yes to going out with him after, you know, his, like, he put in the time to be charming and win her over. And that just gave me, I don't know, made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, just like, ugh, that's how it happens. And then we get the man himself, you know, there, when he shows up, when she's trying to see Zava, and the bodyguard is like, no one sees Zava. And then you hear his voice before you see him. Those hairs go right back up, and it's like, oh my God, he's right there. He was there the whole time, right behind you. And he says, I don't know why she started this conversation, because it really just left him an opening to be so cruel. But when she says, I don't understand, you know, why you bought West Ham, I thought Richmond was your true love. And he says, like many men, you know, I get bored with the same old, same old. And I was like, oh my God, she could kill him right now, and it would be justifiable homicide. I couldn't believe it. So yes, that was a blow. That, like, and so the fact that, you know, she took all that energy from Rupert dissing her, from remembering how she even got herself into the situation where Rupert could wield this, you know, power over her emotions, and just gave it to Zava. Let Zava have it. I love that. So yes,
the thing that I worried about, but knew that I was probably worrying after nothing from the first episode, was, so is Rebecca just reverting back to season one Rebecca, you know, early season one, and the journey of the second episode completely refuted that worry. And then some. I mean, it's one thing for Tony Head to play Rupert as well as he does, but to really sell a villain as well as this show has, it takes the additional context of how he relates to and has affected other people. And she covers so much ground in so few words that mm-hmm. it feels so completely authentic and lived in and nothing even close to a flight of fancy. We have all known of somebody like Rupert, even if we haven't known them personally, because it is the old thing of a man in power who knows he is in power and he is relatively untouchable because a certain amount of money means that you can be a certain amount of malevolent and just not be stopped, or a certain kind of malevolent. And of the various things that I hope for this third and final season of this story that they meant to tell is I hope for some spectacular comeuppance for Rupert.
I think that this show is about how the characters will like release the hold that Rupert has over them. Yeah. I mean, Rebecca specifically, and he won't learn a thing. He won't suffer a thing. That's my prediction. Put that in my envelope for the end of the season.
I'm gonna hope against hope. Even though I know it is probably kind of futile for him to actually get some sort of a comeuppance. I'd love to see it. They have helped me hate him so much that I'm gonna hope. Even though I know it is probably not reasonable to believe that it'll actually happen.
He delivers this so well. And of course, you know, having 7 seasons of Buffy to make me love Anthony Head, I think that it affects me even more. Like, yeah.
Rupert Giles has betrayed you by becoming Rupert Mannion.
Yeah.
Now, in this exchange between Rupert and Rebecca, and I forget which one of you just said it a moment ago, but it there's so much said in not that many words. And like, you know, I think it was Gene that said, you know, I don't understand why this conversation, like why Rebecca even started this conversation, because he starts needling her immediately. Like he starts saying about how, you know, Nate, he calls McGaffer, you know, who really understands the game. Oh, it's such an advantage. Like, in other words, you know, at least my dude actually understands what the hell he's talking about. And everything else he said. And especially the disgusting talk about, oh, I'm like any other man, I just get bored and move on. Like, all of that is so gross. But then, you know, similarly, and I think Gene, you're probably gonna want to take over here, but when Rebecca ends up storming into the urinal, the amount that she just levels Zava, and it only takes what, like 5 or 6 sentences, something like that. I mean, it does not take a lot for her to put this monster in his place, and it is just so delightful to watch. And it's also hilarious as a dude, and I don't know how to put this eloquently, but the sound design in this particular scene struck me as very accurate, which I thought was quite funny.
He focuses a lot on his hydration. That much we know. he makes sure that he is not going to be dehydrated if he can avoid it.
Indeed. But Gene, I presume you have thoughts about the urinal scene.
Well, it was weird. You know, I was like, oh my god, that's like the last place I would. You know, I don't care how much. I have to unload on a man. I'm not going to, I don't want to be around that. Also, maligning asparagus, that just kind of bugged me. But whatever. It seemed a weird note to add, but I guess they had to have something because it's such a weird scene. Ultimately, I want, you know, the whole time from the beginning, I'm like, you don't want that guy. Why do you want that guy? You know? But and so they're getting him. Like I'm anti acquiring Zava, but I know that this is the show. Well, yeah, this is what has to happen. And the players, you know, most of the players are pretty psyched about it. And so I have to go with them, even though obviously Jamie is not.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Zava. I mean, we're getting him, whether we really want him or not, or we think he's going to overall be a net positive for the team or not. The evolution of Jamie Tart, which we saw earlier in the episode when he repeatedly tried to comfort Roy and kept getting, pushed back as if Roy were being attacked. The more conscientious, empathetic, I think he even says, it's called empathy.
Right.
This different Jamie Tart, who really has grown over the course of 2 seasons, I think one of the best markers of him having changed and grown is that he doesn't know how he doesn't think that Zava is a great idea, not out of sheer jealousy, but because he knows what Zava's personality is like and how disruptive that'll be to the vibe of the team, even though the rest of the team, mm-hmm. Danny included, who will be displaced as Jamie will, because Zava plays the same position both of them do. Danny's all about it because it's, oh, wow, his hero. And everybody else is looking at the who cares, we're going to win games, and not thinking about the overall vibe kill that Jamie and Roy seem to immediately clock this having the potential to do. How fast and how do we think this is going to go off the rails?
Pretty fast, but I mean, I just, it just brought me right back to the episode where they brought Jamie back and I was like, that's a bad idea. You know, so I was on the record, I think, is like, I'm thinking they shouldn't bring that guy back. He's got too much baggage, but of course that's a show, not a sport.
Right.
It's not an actual sport. It is a show. It needs drama. I hope Zava is more, and you know, exhibits more personality, a more complicated personality than he's exhibited so far. You know, it's an honor for you to meet me, really.
Like, so gross. so gross.
I don't know. I think he won't be on. I think he's not going to be on for the whole season. He's not going to be another Jamie Tart. He's going to, I don't know what he's going to do, but it just seems like a cartoon right now, a cartoon of a football player. And by the way, I said football without even thinking it was weird.
There you go.
I was like,
we're making inroads day by day.
Yep. I don't know. I'm not sure what to think of Zava. I kind of wonder if for Jamie to realize his one true self in the happy way, not in the bad way, you know, to reach self-actualization or whatever, that he needs to coach Zava from being old Jamie to new Jamie, you know, that he becomes mm-hmm. the mentor rather than the mentee. Maybe I'm full of it, but we'll see what happens. But I think, you know, it seems that they're in this season and even in this episode, there's a lot of disruptive forces all coming, you know, coming into the show and into the team and in Keeley's life, you know, as we talked about with Barbara earlier. And, you know, obviously all of these threads presumably are going to need to be tied up at some point in the next, what, like 8 episodes. So they're setting up for a lot to be done, and that's not bad, but they're creating, you know, quite the mountain of things to accomplish in not that much television time. So we'll see how this all plays out.
Other things to throw in from the game at Chelsea before we move on to the last scene that gets very contemplative.
I wanted to mention the halftime at the match where, you know, we see the team excitedly trying to figure out as a team, how do we get through the rest of this game? And they're just starting to do that. And then Trent Crim, formerly the Independent, comes in and everything stops. And in and of itself, okay, fine, whatever. But, you know, Ted quickly realizes that this is untenable, which, again, that's fine. But he calls Roy aside, and rather than doing the, like, you know, kind of yokel huckster, like, you know, let me back you into the do better, you know, realization, he basically says to Roy, lock it up, big guy, and fix this now, which I had no problem with, but was a surprise. It was surprisingly forward to my eyes for Ted Lasso of all characters. And I don't know, mm-hmm. Do you guys feel the same way, or am I making something up here?
It was unexpected for me.
Exactly.
It stuck out in the same way. And it's, I made the mention of him not knowing who, or acting like he didn't know who Juventus was earlier in the episode. You know, I think a lot of what we're probably going to see this season is Ted balancing things that he needs to act on and people that he can drop the act with. because he needs to cut to the chase and get something done, and places where he knows that he kind of needs to continue to cosplay. I'm the silly yokel with a mustache. Hello,
right,
howdy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think Roy is very much one of those people that Ted doesn't, they are not fooled or served by Ted the character. And Ted can just be the guy who is like, I can't fix this. You have to fix this. And it's dumb that you're not. I mean, just like when he just plain blunt goes for it like that. I would like to see less and less of Ted having to fall back on the, oh, well, gee, shucks, I don't know nothing about no football. Because he's past that point. He knows he's past that point. And it almost feels like a defense mechanism at this point, that he still relies on it, even though a bunch of these guys know him too well by now.
Yeah, I think that's very well put. Gene, what did you think about this?
I was surprised too. It was like to the point. Usually Ted is like, let these things like figure themselves out. And he's like, I don't know what your beef is, but order off the vegan menu. It's a great line. I like to keep that in my back pocket. And saying like, this is about more than this. This is more important than just a game. Or I think you better fix it now. And so I guess it was like the end of no more, you know, no more coddling Roy. Just because he broke up with Keeley, he's got to, we're not going to, you know, just entertain his whims just because he's having a bad day.
Yeah, and we don't need to belabor it, but I did think that the exchange between Roy and Trent was nice. You know, it's exactly what I think, Moises, that you had said earlier, that, you know, oh, there must have been some way that Roy was offended or hurt in the past, and sure enough, that's what happened. And I thought that both of them kind of owned it and moved on in a very Ted Lasso-y kind of, like the series kind of way. And I thought it was handled well, and we didn't need to, you know, like you had said, string it out for 15 episodes. We just took care of it.
Yeah. Well, Trent Crim is like the least... of all the characters, he has the fewest like shticks, or weird personality traits. He, except for saying Trent Crim in The Independent, he seems like just a guy. You know, he doesn't seem to have. That should be interesting this season to see that if we learn that he too has like some. Interesting backstory causes him to do what he does. But I've always liked him since the original introduction of the character.
Very, very charming. One of those standout supporting performances in the first season that landed so well for everybody because he was never showy, never drawing attention to himself, and just, you know, being the subject matter expert pool reporter. Who was there and cool and had a bit of an aura of mystery to him, dorky mystery, but still mystery.
Dorky mystery. He's something to aspire to.
That's the thing is, you know, when I went out, on the convention circuit, a couple years ago when things opened back up and my hair was longer and I was wearing glasses and a sport coat over jeans. A couple times I got, that's a cool Trent Crim cosplay. And
nice.
I went, that is a fantastic compliment that I don't deserve, but I appreciate it.
That's great.
So some of the best writing that they have done so far for me is this kind of after the fact scene in the coach's office where Roy reflects on whether he should have stayed at Chelsea and, quote, just enjoyed himself.
Oh, gosh.
But that's just not who he is. I hope Brett Goldstein got to write that for himself, or he bought a very expensive dinner for the member of their writer's room who wrote it for him. Because it's some of the best dialogue that he has had to deliver. And I think says so much about where Roy's head is. And it, for me, helped make more sense of why he would break up with Keeley. It's almost like Worf going, "No, Captain, I do not deserve my Starfleet commission. I must resign." Shut up, Worf. Get back on the Enterprise. we need you. I think that little bit really enshrined that, that Roy is the Lieutenant Commander Worf of Ted Lasso. what did you guys think about this this scene?
Oh man, it really hit me hard. Just the, I mean, just when you think like Ted Lasso has filled you up with so many like life's, you know, things to ponder about life moments, and that relate to your own life. I was like, maybe I should have just effing enjoyed myself. Wow, like that's some next level, you know, self-actualizing theory that I do not expect from a TV show. And the excitement when he says, "But that's not who I am," and Ted says, "Not yet," and I'm like, "Yet? That's right. He still has a few more episodes to be somebody who, because that is kind of what he needs to in order to be in a relationship with Keely is to be why not just enjoy what you have."
Yeah, you know, and I was talking earlier about how I feel like, you know, we hit the kind of tropes and in cliches of, you know, normal modern sitcoms. And this was a place where I think they danced on the line really effectively, because at a first glance, it was just him talking about going to his old football club. And then you started to think, well, was he really talking about Keely? And I don't think that's what we're supposed to take from it. I think it's more, and I think Moises, you were alluding to this a moment ago, that this is just the headspace that he's in. It's not so much exactly that it's a direct application to the Keely relationship as much as this is the kind of man I am. This is the kind of things I think. And you can interpret how that would also be applicable to the relationship with Keely, where he decided to end it, you know, before he felt like he had overstayed his welcome. And I don't know, I thought it was handled very deftly, and I really liked how it was done. And then, you know, you end the episode with, or just about end the episode with Ted Lasso making the, you know, "Sport" is a great nickname as well. And he says "Goodnight, Sport" to Trent Crim, who just kind of wags his finger like, "Yep, walked right into that one." No, I thought this entire scene was excellently done.
Mm. Actually, it just made me think like how Ted says, like, well, some say it's better to quit and then be fired.
Right,
and
exactly.
So some say it's better to break up than be broken up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's masterful, absolutely masterful. And if we're getting this level of depth on Roy early in the season, we've got 10 more episodes and a whole lot of characters to wrap things up with, at least for the purpose of the three-act story that they're telling here. Prognostication-wise, or maybe just feverish hopes that the two of you have for things that we're going to get from members of the supporting cast that we haven't focused on, whether it's people's journeys into becoming a restaurateur, or you know, becoming an even higher end manager of football operations at the club. You know, what kinds of hopes do either of you have, whether it comes to special focus that we're going to get on different characters or things that you hope get resolved a certain way?
For me, I think I'm a sucker for Higgins and his relationship with both his wife's kids, but his whole family relationship, I think, is so adorable and so lovely. And we got a fair bit of that already, but I'd love to see more of it. And I'd love to see Higgins have a little more of a backbone. And that implies, like, in terms of fights, not at all. I just mean, I guess self-confidence is what I'm looking for. I want him to have more self-confidence. And I also, as much as I adore Danny Rojas, you know, and that's he said the name of this very podcast, I want him to be a little bit deeper. You know, they leverage him very effectively, and I love that. And I don't want to lose that, but at the same time, I'd like to see a little more of Danny, which, by the way, quick aside, I timed the moment Ted's 11:11 alarm went off, and then eventually we hear Danny Rojas say, "I wished for Zava" or something like that 30 seconds ago, it was like between 29 and 31 seconds from the alarm going off and Danny Rojas saying, "I just wished for that 30 seconds ago," which is such a mind exploding. Like, I've got to assume that was deliberate. And that is such a cool, such a cool thing that is just phenomenal. I didn't get a chance to mention earlier, but I'd love to see Higgins and Danny Rojas get a little more time, because I think all of the first tier, you know, secondary or maybe primary characters like Roy, for example, I mean, I know we're going to get a lot more of that, but I'd love to see some Danny and Higgins. I don't know. What do you think, Gene?
One little note. I love Danny Rojas. I hope that they similarly hope that they break him out of the kind of idiot savant thing.
Yes.
He's the idiot Buddha of the club, who says really dumb, incredibly profound things occasionally, and then otherwise is just out in space. But one of the things that I really love about Apple's partnership with the MLS is that they actually have Curiso Fernandez doing voiceover on some of the MLS stuff.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's so cool.
So yeah, there was this opening montage, and I was like, that voice sounds really familiar, but much more erudite than I'm. Oh, it's Curiso Fernandez. Gene, what are your hopes for the season from this point?
Well, they're not sport related. I want to see. I want Rebecca to find a good boyfriend. That's what I would like to see, is her to be not in a ongoing psychological battle with Rupert. They haven't even mentioned Sam and Rebecca. I think that's just done.
Yeah, that's a little unusual.
But even if it's not done, it's not HR appropriate. So I'm gonna say, and I love Sam. I mean, maybe I just want him for myself. But I do think that Rebecca's had like one dumb boyfriend. That guy, I can't even remember his name.
Same.
It was forgettable.
You
know the guy, and then and there was one young guy, you know, in her apartment at one point, I think, but she hasn't had like a good solid boyfriend. I don't think there's anybody we've seen so far that really would fit the bill. I hope that character turns up, and if not, I just hope she can just forget about Rupert, leave it, and sell the team. Sell the team. I want Rebecca to sell the
interesting.
Team. So I don't think she needs that. So that's me.
Well, as I mentioned, I've seen a couple more episodes, and I don't want to say anything that could potentially things that are coming up. But
so we blow the spoiler horn, and Casey and I will hang up now.
One of the big things for me is we've gotten some more depth on Jamie and Sam, and even Isaac McAdoo, our new captain after Roy retired. But I'd love just a little bit more depth on some of the players. Everything that they have said about their intentions about this season make me feel like it's just a matter of them getting back around to various things, and there being only so much that they can put in one episode to the next. The next episode, I should mention, is titled 4-5-1. And if you know the way that numbers spell out the way that formations work in soccer, I bet you have an idea of what that means. I'll leave it at that. Any last closing thoughts from the two of you before we wrap things up?
No, I'm just excited for the rest of the season, because it is going in directions that I didn't personally expect. I don't know, maybe I'm unsophisticated, but we're going in different places. And so I'm really excited for the rest of the season. And I haven't decided if I want, you know, because obviously I can't yet, but do I want like a spinoff? Do I want a fourth season? I really don't know. I feel like this is definitely got a plan, and I want to see through the end of the plan, and then we'll see how I feel after. I don't want this to be a Firefly all over again. And obviously it's not getting canceled, so it won't be, but you know, I don't think my heart could take it.
It's already not a Firefly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even if Ted goes his separate ways, I think there is definitely still a show in following the team and the people hovering around the team. You know, my long shot, you know, if I were running this show and making all the decisions, if I were Jason Sudeikis, I feel like Beard would stick around. Ted goes back to the U.S. And instead of Beard ascending to the head coach role, I think he would not feel right about it and feel like his job is to eternally be the best assistant coach on the field, and that gaffer cap goes to Roy Kent.
Yeah, I can see that.
I would very much hang around for more seasons of the wild things afflicting, you know, people working, playing for and working for a Premier League club like this. I have a feeling that everybody involved is incentivized to find out a way to make the Ted Lasso universe continue going. All right. If we've nothing else, then I guess that is it, sports. Until we are back next week for more of the sport among all sports. Let's go Richmond, let's go Arsenal, let's go Austin FC. And I've been Moises Chuyon. Thank you again to Casey Liss and Gene McDonald. We'll see you back here in a week on The Incomparable.